take a deep dive into the U.S. Constitution and talk about how it is, and is not, shaping the U.S. government today. I'm your host, Amber Veo, professor of law and policy at Worcester State University. And today, we don't seem to have any fun animals in our yard. I promised you last time I'd keep a lookout if our friend that deer came back, but so far, nothing but a bunch of crazy turkeys. That's literal, not just talking about the politicians. But there's a lot going on in the world today, and one of the things that we've been thinking about around here, really since the COVID pandemic and the struggle between states for resources, is the nature of the relationship among the U.S. states. This is interesting now as we see different states with different regional coalitions working together in light of diminishing resources and choices by the federal government to underfund some states or to use the National Guard of some states in other states that aren't their home state. So we'll get into some of this week as we finish out the part of the Constitution that deals with Article 4, the Full Faith and Credit Clause, and questions of what states owe each other. Grab a seat by the fire and let's knock out another article of the Constitution. Last week, we got into one of those major sections of Article 4, particularly full faith and credit, where states have to recognize the civil records and legal documents of other states, and privileges and immunities, which says states can't discriminate against you if you're from a different state. This week, we'll get into more structural stuff, and the way the Constitution sets up some guidelines for things like adding new states and ensuring democratic governments in each state. Article 4, Section 3 starts with, "New states may be admitted by the Congress into this Union, but no new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of any other state, nor any state be formed by the jurisdiction of two or more states, or parts of states, without consent of the legislatures of the states concerned, as well as of the Congress." Now remember, at the time when the Constitution was being written, we were dealing with a lot of westward expansion. Though, given our expansionist ideas in Greenland and Venezuela, I guess not too much has changed on that front. So, we needed some guidelines on what it meant to let states into the Union. Before the Civil War, there were questions about how to admit states into the Union. Typically, states were admitted two at a time to maintain the balance between free and slave states, or as I like to say, states that allowed human trafficking and states that forbid it. This process was known as the Missouri Compromise, and intended to restrict the spread of slavery geographically and in the federal legislature, or Congress, in particular in the Senate. This is why our sister state, Maine, left Massachusetts in 1820 to go live its own life. But we still share the same bird, the beautiful black-capped chickadee. If you ever do go to Maine, when you drive into the state, the sign says, "Maine, the way life should be." And you know, I feel a little more relaxed every time I cross that state line. So if you are one of our listeners from Maine, you are living in the promised land, my friend. But states also typically aren't allowed to secede unless there's some reason. So technically, Maine did secede from Massachusetts. How do you form a new state from within a state? Maine. You have Maine secede. How? Because the end of the clause stipulates, without the consent of the legislatures of the states concerned, as well as the Congress. This means that if both states, or however many states, agree, and Congress agrees, you can create a new state from what was typically in the border of other states. But there has to be lots of agreement on this. Incidentally, this is why I believe we should reform a lot of, literally reform, actually, a lot of the states, rather than worry about getting rid of the Electoral College or gerrymandering. This could result in some hilarious states. I think, for instance, a lot of upstate New York would be happier as their own state or a part of the Midwest than they are as part of New York City. But I don't live there, so it's not my problem. Western Mass, however, would probably also happily no longer be a part of Massachusetts until they tried out other states, and then that Mass whole pride took over. Then they'd probably just suggest we throw Boston into the harbor. But other times we've seen states seceding, states like West Virginia. West Virginia did not want to secede from the Union, because say what you will about hillbillies, they're not traitors. So they were able to create West Virginia and stay in the Union when Virginia seceded to the South. The state-making ability gets a little further fleshed out by the last part of Section 3. The Congress shall have the power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or property belonging to the United States, and nothing in this Constitution shall be so construed as to prejudice any claims of the United States or of any particular state. This basically gives Congress federal authority over every place that is American. Or as the saying goes, the Constitution follows the flag. Where our flag flies, the Constitution applies. I'm going to put that on a shirt because that's a me original as far as I know. But this was a real question during the second Iraq War when it came to Guantanamo Bay. Now, as legal counsel from the Bush administration itself admitted, they created the term enemy combatant because they wanted something that legally didn't count. Prisoners of war have certain rights. Civilians have certain rights. Enemy combatants weren't a thing. So under the way the liberal international order works, you don't have a right unless it's specifically spelled out. So the Bush administration rolled with enemy combatant, and as their administration, again, I'm not putting words in their mouths, their lawyers have said flat out, they were looking for the legal equivalent of outer space. They wanted somewhere they could claim the law didn't apply, so they could engage in torture and other techniques that the Constitution forbids and that American law forbids. But as the Supreme Court decided multiple times in the early 2000s, the Constitution follows the flag, meaning that if it's ours, the Constitution applies to the agents of our government, including the military, who are there. There's a great book by Jonathan Mailer called The Challenge, Hamdan v. Rumsfeld and the Fight Over Presidential Power, which tells the story of the torture program and other programs at Guantanamo Bay, and the Air Force JAG officer, Navy Lieutenant Commander Charles D. Swift, who risked his career and eventually lost his career defending the Constitution, and the detainee who had been denied his rights. This is certainly a profile in courage, because while our military members do swear an oath to the Constitution and not a person, and that oath includes saying that they will not follow an unlawful order, it's not always easy to do in real life, or when it's a time of war, or if you're not entirely sure when and how an order is lawful or not. In a high temperature, particularly a fear and anger time, and your entire career is at risk, it's not always as easy as the movies make it look to make the right decision. But the point here was that what Lieutenant Commander Swift followed was what Article 4 said. Congress has power over wherever the American government or legal system is operating. That means that if you are a member of the FBI and you are working abroad, you still have to follow the Constitution because that's the decision you made. And the power also means that Congress is bound by the rules because that's the point of the Constitution. It's meant to bind the government to behaving certain ways and being limited in certain ways, regardless of who they are dealing with. The, as it would turn out, really radical idea motivating our constitutional development was that if the government has power over someone you don't like, sooner or later, it will be able to use that power over you. So we want to bind the powers to an appropriate level. And the last part of Article 4 deals with the other part. We don't just bind the government for fun. We bind the government because it ensures our freedom. Article 4, Section 4 says, "The United States shall guarantee to every state in this Union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion and on application of the legislature or of the executive when the legislature cannot be convened against domestic violence." This is called the Guarantee Clause. States are meant to be laboratories of democracy. They're allowed to have a lot of flexibility in how they do everything, but at the end of the day, they have to have a republican form of government. Remember, in this case, republican form of government is where people govern through elections. We live in a democratic republic or a constitutional republic or a representative democracy, depending on which aspect of our society you're looking at. A democracy is a government by the demos, the people. This is the main characteristic of who has power and how governments are chosen. The state and the system is a republic, one where the people's will is what is representative. So we're kind of all of the above. Although, if you really want to get in some wild real-life questions about this, check out the case Luther v. Borden in 1849, when Rhode Island had two governments operating because one of them decided not to leave. It turns out even without all of the crazy turkeys running around, New England is kind of wild. But the other thing that is that the federal government has to protect us from invasion and domestic violence. This means that if another state or country tries to invade us, the federal government has to help us stop them. The National Guard was a big deal for this, or as it was known at the time of the Constitution, the militia. But that was when we were engaging in westward expansion, sometimes known as genocide, and the people who were already living there fought back. Today, this would be something like if New York was seizing Western Connecticut, or taking Jersey City and making it the sixth borough. The domestic violence part has to do with insurrection and rebellion, which was actually pretty common during George Washington's time, because remember, the Articles of Confederation had made it so that the government couldn't afford to pay its veterans, and they were pretty angry about that. So all of that stuff about why we didn't have, or why we don't have the Articles of Confederation anymore, really goes into where we got a lot of this Article 4 stuff. But that basically sums up our major issues on what Article 4 requires. Some amount of cooperation between states, some limitations on the way states can fight, some ways the federal government has to guarantee states are safe, and then some wiggle room where the states can expand. This week has covered a lot of fun technical stuff. Well, I think it's fun, but I'm a nerd. As we think about the ways states are supposed to work together, the fourth article is an interesting way to conceptualize it. When we get to talking about the 14th Amendment, some of this is going to come back because within the context of full faith and credit and privileges and immunities, we get some questions about what the state and federal government owe each other and how much responsibility the federal government has to make sure there is a floor of equal protection common across the states, which becomes, as you might imagine, even more complicated. For now, it's enough to know that Article 4 is about keeping you safe by mandating that states have some restrictions on how they can discriminate against you, make your life freer by making sure that states have to acknowledge your ability to live, work, and get educated throughout any part of the country. So if you want to change your name, fake your death, and start a new life in the wilds of Wyoming, you're legally welcome to do so. Well, not the faking your own death part, I'm pretty sure that's illegal. But Article 4 allows you to do some ability to have the freedom of movement and guarantee of democracy within your state and across any state within the United States. But that's a wrap for this week and this article. Until next time, follow us on Blue Sky, YouTube, Instagram, and Substack at Dr. Funsponge, or hit me up on LinkedIn for those looking for professional contacts. Feel free to rate and share this podcast. We're trying to boost those numbers. As always, thanks for listening, and keep the civic flame burning bright. The Civic Flame is a collaboration with Dr. Funsponge Media, writer Amber Veo, and sound producer Matthew Munyon. Thanks for listening.